This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Now, in that last segment, we talked about the scale and appropriateness of the law enforcement response that ultimately led to the discovery and arrest of Boston Marathon bombing suspect Jahar Tsarnaev. But what about our individual emotional responses to that manhunt? Tiziana Deering is a contributor to Cognoscenti, WBUR's opinion page. She's here now, and here's how she described the complexity of her personal response on the night of April 19th, after police lifted that shelter-in-place recommendation, and word began to spread that Tsarnaev had been discovered cowering under the cover of a Watertown boat.
Friends and their kids came over to grill a late dinner with us once the ban was lifted, and news streamed in as we talked about the week's events. We talked about the cold-blooded atrocities the suspects had committed, our pride in the city, and what was likely to happen to Jahar. We wanted justice, but to my surprise, I felt something different, too. I was worried about him.
That's Tiziana Deering reading from her Cognoscenti opinion piece entitled, How Far Does a Mother's Sympathy Reach? Further Than I Thought. Tiziana's with us now. Welcome back to the show, Tiziana.
Thank you, Meghna. Happy to be here.
So, listeners, you heard how Tiziana Deering felt at that moment. What about you? Was there even an inkling of sympathy or not? And what's your thought about why some people may have felt this complex stew of emotions on that day, April 19th? You can call us with your thoughts and impressions. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Tiziana, even the beginnings of sympathy since then, have you thought about or understood more why you felt that way?
Yeah, actually, I have. And I actually think, Meghna, it comes down in part to empathy, which is that part where you can kind of put yourself in someone else's shoes a little bit. And I think at that moment, thinking about my own son, who, by the way, is 8, and so I've had some empathy for the family who lost their 8-year-old son
the Martins,
then, too, yes. But it wasn't hard to imagine how terrible I would feel if my own son were vulnerable like that. And now, as time has passed over the last week and we've gotten more information, you know, my feelings have changed and become very complex and confused again, too. But I think in that moment, sometimes you can put yourself in somebody else's shoes for a minute. And I was in another mother's shoes for a minute.
So you really do feel that there was something maternal going on?
You know, for me, I do. For me, I do, yes.
Okay. Now, so this opinion piece that you've written has had several hundred comments
yes.
on WBUR.org, possibly amongst the most we've ever had. Obviously, a great mix, but many people saying that, first of all, they have no idea how or why you could feel what you feel. Others saying, thank God they're not the only ones. I mean, have you had, for people in your circle, what's been the response to you?
Well, it's interesting because in general, in my circle, when I've heard from people, they have said, I felt that way too. And I was embarrassed and uncomfortable about feeling that way. And it's good to know I wasn't the only one.
Okay. So let's talk about how you, and this is an awkward way of phrasing it, but how you feel about that feeling
yeah.
that you had. Because, you know, as you just mentioned, here is a person, a 19-year-old, that despite his age and whatever the media is saying about his background, is alleged to have put a backpack down that caused the death of was in part responsible for the death of many people, including an 8-year-old. I mean, a lot of people would look at that and say, even for a mother, how can you have even the remotest bit of sympathy for that? So, I mean, in retrospect, are you surprised by how you felt?
You know, I was surprised at how I felt at the time, actually. And, you know, in retrospect, the thing that I keep coming back to is this was a complex situation, and I don't feel bad about having a complexity of emotions, right? Horror, anger, empathy, fear, confusion, and I don't feel bad about having a complex emotional response to a pretty unprecedented experience.
Mm. Now, you've worked for many years in the not-for-profit sector across Greater Boston, and your job and jobs have had you encounter a variety of hardships that people endure. And yet, I think one of the major differences in this case is that it was happening in our own backyards and in real time through the coverage of, you know, online and broadcast media. Do you think that in part is what contributed to the stew of emotions that you and other people were feeling, that we were riding that wave in reality with everybody else.
Yes, actually, Magna, I think that's exactly right. I know I felt like, and I think other people felt like, you were constantly reforming judgments, constantly, like every 10 seconds, reforming judgments, because you were getting snippets and snapshots of information, but I think we all felt like participants in everything that was happening. So we weren't passive consumers. I didn't feel like a passive consumer. I felt like an active consumer. And I was, you know, sort of responding all the time and not always with great understanding.
Well, I wonder how much this also has to do, and I'm saying this as a member of the media that was covering these events and continues to do, in the moments which the information began on Friday to trickle in about who Jahar Tsarnaev is, a narrative quickly formed. He's the younger brother of the mastermind older brother who died. He was the, you know, the pot smoker, maybe the naive one, maybe this, maybe that. In a way, he was painted as somewhat sympathetic. I mean, does that have something to do with it, the narrative that the media foisted on everyone in the moments of Friday?
It does. And, you know, Magna, you asked me earlier, how do I feel about how I felt? And the thing that has kind of stayed on my mind the most is the story I wrote for myself in those moments about who he was and how that whole thing played out. And I've thought a lot, and I wrote a story that was, he was the younger brother under the influence of the older brother, didn't really understand what he was doing, and then had to admit maybe it was just inconceivable to me that somebody could do it, understanding what they were doing. But over the last week, I've thought a lot about what compelled me to tell that story to myself in that moment.
Well, Hannah Rosen, who writes for the XX blog on Slate's website, asked this question that I just asked you as well, but then she also said, in the grand scheme of things, if there isn't some greater understanding to be had, we shouldn't even be talking about any sort of maternal sympathy for someone who basically committed an atrocity.
Yeah, I read that, and I think that's an interesting point. But I think, and this is not going to be a popular sentiment, I don't think, but I think there has to be a moment where we talk about forgiveness and empathy in everything, and everything. And, you know, I come at it from that place and think even in the hardest moments, we're called to struggle with our feelings of forgiveness and empathy, as well as our feelings of anger and defiance and thirst for revenge, which are all normal.
Okay, I know there's some people who want to get to talk to you for a second, but I have to ask you one more question. Forgiveness and empathy in all things, but isn't there a gradation? Because,
yes,
for example, there's the forgiveness and empathy that we as a community need to be given to the family and friends of those who died and those who are still suffering.
Well, the empathy, they don't need to be forgiven for anything.
No, they're victims. You're right. Yeah, empathy.
And you know, one of the things that I said in my piece, and I think some people missed, but some people heard, was, listen, the bulk of my empathy and sympathy goes there, without question. When I wrote this piece, there was this other thing that was the thing that was troubling me, my overwhelming sense of sadness and anger on behalf of the families who were suffering didn't trouble me at all. That was an appropriate response. It was these other troubling, confusing feelings that were on my mind.
Okay, so I'm going to try to squeeze in a call here as we run down on time. Danielle's calling from Cambridge. Danielle, you're on the air, but you only have a couple seconds, I'm afraid.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. You only have a couple seconds, though.
I just want to say one quick thing. I guess I just feel sadness that somehow at this community of Cambridge couldn't seem to embrace these two young men in a way that it's embraced me, my husband, so many other immigrants I know. I mean, this is like home to me, and it's such a multicultural place, and yet somehow these two guys fell through the cracks and were able to commit this atrocity.
Danielle, thank you so much for your call. Nancy is calling from Lawrence. Nancy, I'm going to try and get you in here. You've just got a couple seconds.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have a 19-year-old son, and he's a freshman in college, and I saw those pictures of this kid, like, doing the robot and tackling each other, and I can really relate to that, and even though, of course, I feel awful for the whole thing that happened, I also feel awful for a 19-year-old that he's cowering, bleeding to death, and you know, bullets all over, and I think of my 19-year-old, and I wouldn't want anybody to go through that. I think it's absolutely awful that these people had, you know, all that was done to them, but I can also empathize with the 19-year-old.
Nancy, thank you so much for your call. Tiziana Deering, we've just got a couple seconds left. This is a case in which the tragedy just continues to abound. So I'm wondering, in the week or so since you've written this, what are you thinking about how we as a region continue to process the complexity of emotions that everyone's been feeling for almost 2 weeks now?
Well, it's interesting because what struck me about the overwhelming response in the comments section was that people were really talking. These weren't one sentences. They were three or four paragraphs. And I think we have to keep talking to each other.
Well, Tiziana Deering is a contributor to WBR's opinion page, Cognoscenti. She's also a nonprofit CEO who writes and lectures about poverty, policy, and social justice. Tiziana, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation at our website, radioboston.org. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.